you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Yes, I am, yes, I am, yes, I am. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. I believe every lie that I ever told. Paid for every heart that I ever stole. I played my cards and I didn't fold. Well, it ain't that hard when you got sold. Somewhere I heard that life is a test. I've been through the worst, but I still get my best. God made my mold different from the rest. Then he broke that mold, so I know I'm blessed. Stand up now and face the sun. Won't hide my tail or turn and run. It's time.
Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, wherever you are in the known world listening to this live or on podcast. We'd like to thank you for joining us for another edition of Brother to Brother, where we have Dr. Nate Chapman and Dr. Keelan Hinton. And again, we are here for all of your community, mental health, love, relationship, and attachment needs. For those that would like to participate in the show, if you have any questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas, you can contact us at b2bpsych@gmail.com. That's B, the number 2, B, P-S-Y-C-H, b2bpsych@gmail.com. As I always say, any questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas that you hear on this show are not supported by Marshall University, are not supported by WMUL, any of their supporters, sponsors, or affiliates, but these are the sole perspectives and ideas of Dr. Nate Chapman as well as Dr. Keelan Hinton. So as we always say, take this advice at your own risk. And as we always say, while some of the information that you may hear on this show may be therapeutic, this is not what, Dr. Chapman?
Not, we want you to recognize that we're not serving the function of a therapist, and we do hope that you get the help that you need, but don't rely on this radio show to do so.
All right, all right. So we are going to, again, as we always say, we are very humbled and very appreciative of those who continue to support the show, who continue to listen, who continue to send us questions, comments, and suggestions. And if we have not gotten back to any of those questions, comments, or suggestions, our deepest apologies. We're doing our best. But we thank you for your interest. So the last 3 weeks, we had a pretty good show. We did a 3-part series on relationships, more specifically infidelity. Even more specifically than that, men and infidelity. And that was a 3-part series, and people really enjoyed it. So I guess before we start up today, we'll just see if there are anything to wrap up in regards to that. And then we will move on to our topic of the day. And our topic of the day will be masculinity. So, and that is, as we discussed relationships, relationship dynamics, and infidelity, that's the one topic and the one word that continued to pop up over and over again: masculinity. So we thought that because it kept coming up over and over again, particularly in relationships and relationship dynamics, we thought it'd be a good idea to talk about what is masculinity, what is toxic masculinity, can masculinity be toxic? Is toxic masculinity a myth? And more specifically, we want to talk about masculinity in relationships, okay? But before we jump into the topic, as we always start out, how are you, sir? How is sunny California treating you?
Yeah, it's good. Can't complain. A nice spring day.
I hear you. We are... as we always say, more things are opening up a little bit more every week. People are getting their shots. People are smiling. The sun is out. People are sitting out in the grass. So while things aren't normal per se, they are better. They are getting better, and the weather's getting better. So, you know, things are good. Things are good. All right. So before we kick off, any parting shots or anything to wrap up, any loose ends to tie up as it relates to relationships, the last three-part series we did on infidelity, relationships, relationship dynamics, any other advice you could think about in regards to couples and things they could do to help them make it through a tough time. What say you? Anything on your mind, sir?
Yeah, I think that last time when we ended, we talked about a number of things that might lead people into infidelity, and, you know, had that a quick conversation about whether someone should stay in those relationships or leave if some type of infidelity has happened. I guess that I just would want to highlight that some people are able to make it work. And there might be some things that will be good for you should you decide that you're one of those couples that want to make it work. You're going to have to find a place of goodwill. I know Dr. Hinton was not so keen on this idea. We talked about it last, but I'm going to remind you of it. If you decide you want to be with the person, you're going to have to figure out how to have some civil conversations about what went down. Probably you're going to need to go see an expert to help you work through those things. One quick acronym that comes from Gottman that might be useful is this idea of attuning. And this is an acronym that is to attune towards the emotions. It's going to be good for both partners with this conversation, but it may start out being better for the person who has committed the betrayals. So the acronym, if you're listening and you write it down, the first letter A is awareness of emotions. So you're going to want to have an awareness of your emotions, and then awareness of your partner's emotions as they, you know, ask you questions or listen to whatever has happened. The T stands for turning towards the emotions. A lot of times, whether we're having these heated conversations or other conversations, depending on how you were raised and what has influenced your ability to handle emotions, you might get a little uncomfortable around emotions and have the ability to actually turn away from your partner or reject them when they're giving you emotions you don't agree with. At this time, you want to find a way to embrace and turn towards them. You is trying to understand the emotions that you're experiencing and that your partner is experiencing. The N is to listen non-judgmentally and non-defensively, which will be hard for you if you're the person who's committed the betrayal, because you might feel like you're getting fire thrown at you, and, you know, it hurts to really have to listen to what's being experienced and do it so without feeling attacked. And then the E is for empathy towards the emotion. Empathy towards this, again, is not just for the person who's been betrayed. It's going to have to go back and forth. But I think that will be one quick thing that you would be helpful. And don't be afraid to tap into a professional. If you're going to tap into a professional and it's about, and you know you want to work on your relationship stuff, I would recommend going to a relationship, a marriage or relationship counselor, as opposed to just individual, just because research suggests when you just go to individual, nothing, I'm not saying anything wrong with individual, but it's more likely that your relationship's not going to work out. And that would probably be because you're not really focusing on the relationship. You're focusing on yourself, and the person who's hearing the story, the individual therapist, is not really getting to hear the whole story. Actually, it might turn into a triangle where you triangle in this individual therapist, and they become another distraction to your relationship. Not distraction, and it's not a good way to put it, but something that's not an ally.
All good stuff, all good stuff. I think what I would say is that for those that have committed, for those who were the person who committed the adultery or who cheated, I just, you've said it before and I'll just say it again just to reiterate, it's important to realize that this is a trauma for your partner. You may not see it that way. You may see the other person as no one. You may see it as nothing. But a part of what we talked about towards the beginning is a part of what makes this such a part of what makes this a trauma is this event has reconfigured the way your partner sees you and your abilities. And I think a lot of times what happens is that it hurts so badly because they never knew that you had it in you. They never knew that you had the capability to commit such an act against them. So it's just important just to bear in mind to have patience. You know, as Dr. Chapman said, to, as best as you can, have patience. Understand that your partner's traumatized. And I think that these events can reframe and reconfigure how they see you as a person sometimes. And they're trying to, amidst all of this, they're trying to put these pieces together of who you are, who they thought you were. You know, again, last time we talked about this idea of, was it all a lie? Are you a liar? Was it all a lie? Were parts and pieces a lie? They're trying to figure all of this out as they sift through this. So just as best as you can, and this is just my two cents and my opinion, just try to be as patient as you can, okay? All right. Let's move on. Let's move on and move forward, okay? So today's conversation is about masculinity. Over and over again, we continue to, as we talked about relationships, as we talked about infidelity, somehow or another, we continued to touch on the idea of masculinity, men and masculinity. So we thought it'd be a good idea to talk about what does masculinity mean for men? Is there such thing as feeling like a man? And how important is the need to feel like a man in our everyday lives, in our relationships? How does that need sort of influence who we are and how we behave in the world? So I guess we'll throw it out there, Dr. Chapman. What do you think? Is masculinity, how important is masculinity to men? Is this just a myth? Is masculinity something that's in our heads? Is it something that exists? And most importantly, what does toxic masculinity mean? Can being masculine be toxic? Any thoughts?
There's lots of questions there. I guess I would start with more of another question before we get to some answers about that. I'm curious what you thought about the Paul Pierce situation like how you think that ties into, if at all, masculinity. Because to me, it's just interesting.
Well, before you start, explain what happened to Mr. Paul Pierce to everyone.
Okay, so Paul Pierce, if you don't know Paul Pierce, you know, an NBA great, right? Some championships in Boston Celtics. I guess he finished out his career, I think, with the Brooklyn Nets. And he sometimes contributes to ESPN. You see him, you know, the truth, you know, talking about.
He's a hater, but that's another show and another conversation for another day.
But anyways, so I don't know when it was, but over the last week, I guess, he was on Instagram Live, and during his Instagram Live feed, he has some women in the background. One, you know, adult entertainer was like giving him a little neck massage, and then you could see him doing twerking in the background, and he was just doing, basically saying a whole bunch of different things, and he ends up getting fired from ESPN for these, I guess we'll just call them shenanigans. And if you haven't heard about it, you can just Google Paul Pierce and it'll come up and you'll get to see what we're talking about. But I'm curious what you make of that and if there's any tie to masculinity for that. Because, I mean, well, I'll just leave it. I won't even because it. Just like, what do you think?
Well, I will say this. So much of what we do, and this is something we've over the last couple of, over the last year or so, and believe it or not, we've been doing this for quite a while.
We have. I think it might be over a year.
It's been,
I don't know.
It's been, sure. It's been over a year. It's been over a year. So, you know, that's a pretty, it's a pretty dope milestone. Over time and over, you know, over time we've talked about and we've touched on masculinity before. I've made this statement directly and indirectly, with our shout out RJ, with RJ and his manifest stuff. We actually just directly and indirectly touched on this as well. I think it's important for people to understand that, and not just people, women to understand that a lot of times so much of what men do has nothing to do, so much of what men do in relationships and in relationship to women have absolutely nothing to do with women and have everything to do with us and how we want to look and appear to other men. When a man, you hear women, and rightfully so, complain about men catcalling or guys driving by and yelling, "Woo, red pants," or whatever. I don't know why I always say red pants. They just... That's my go-to, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. But when men are driving by in a car and they yell and scream at you or something like that, those types of acts have absolutely nothing to do with women. As in, a lot of times, most of the 99% of the time, we know you're not going to say, "Hey, that guy's yelling at me like an animal. Oh, that turns me on. Let me go talk to him and give him my telephone number." That's not going to happen. Most of the time, those are acts of masculinity. Those are men trying to look tough in front of their boys. Those are men who, again, are trying to look like a man, trying to look like a player, who are trying to make themselves look attractive for their friends, not for the woman. So I think it's interesting that, and I think to some degree, and it's probably another conversation for another day, women could probably say the same thing as well. You know, when we talk about we talk about wearing makeup. When you ask guys about how they feel about women wearing makeup, they'd be like, "That's unnecessary. Why you put that on?" I actually heard a girl say, "A lot of times I wear makeup, and when I dress up, it's because I want to be the baddest chick in the party." This ain't about you. This is about me. And this is about me being the baddest chick in the party. So it's not just men. I want these people. I wonder how much of what we do is to affirm and reaffirm who we are. And masculinity, I wonder how much of what men do is to sort of reaffirm that I am a man, that I do man things, and I need the other guys or the other men that I hang around to know that I am an alpha, that I'm not just a dude, I'm not just a male, but I am an alpha. That I am a man's man. Because masculinity, being a man, whatever that means, and that's a whole part of this conversation, being a man is a, I believe, a core, doing man stuff, quote unquote man stuff, and being a man is a core part of our identity. What else do we do? The only roles that we have in the world are to provide and to protect. That's it. We don't have babies. We don't socialize babies. We do nothing. So if I am not being a quote unquote, if I'm not being a man, if I'm not providing or protecting or being an alpha in some way, why am I here? Why do I exist? What am I doing? And as we said before, the hardest part about being male, or being a man is that we don't have a marker when we become men. And I think that I'll stop there, but I think that that's where a lot of the confusion and a lot of the behaviors and a lot of things that men do. And I think that that's where a lot of the confusion comes from for men, is that we're always constantly trying to validate our masculinity, because that is the core of our identity.
Okay. So then how do you apply that information to this Paul Pierce situation?
Again, that's just a dude trying to look like, I think that something happens when you lose a core part of who you are. Paul Pierce has played basketball since he was 3 years old out of the womb. And while he has a job commentating and he probably has all these other ventures, the core part of who he is and who he was a basketball player. And that part of him is dead now. And I think that that was his vehicle. That was his major vehicle to express his masculinity. And when men have no vehicle to express their masculinity, they act ridiculous. I truly believe that. Case in point. I had a few knee surgeries getting older.
Yeah.
I started back training jiu-jitsu. Shout out Ground Zero, 7th Avenue. Started back training jiu-jitsu again a few weeks ago. Okay? And I got beat down by all the 20-year-olds because I'm in my 40s. But my point is this. Because I have an outlet to channel that aggression, I don't feel a need in my everyday life to be aggressive because I have a vehicle for it. Somebody cuts me off and flips me off because I'm not the best driver. Somebody says something crazy to me. It doesn't move me. Now, a part of that is my personality. But I also wonder, is a larger part of that because I have a vehicle to express that masculinity in some way? And I wonder for men who don't have that vehicle, who don't have some lane or some vehicle to sort of express those parts and pieces of those personality, of their personality, of their identity. I wonder if they subconsciously go looking for something to validate them being a man. The neighbor says something. You know what? I'm finna go over there and see what he got to say. Is that really necessary? Mm-hmm. But when you don't have a vehicle to express those parts and pieces of masculinity or your identity or who you are, I'm not saying all men. I'm saying some men. I wonder if we subconsciously look for little things and little avenues to be aggressive, to be the man, to dominate in some way, whether it be our kids. It's my way or the highway in this house. I keep the lights on. Like, you look for little ways to validate that you are a man in some way when you don't have a vehicle to get that out. Now, again, the only reason I brought up jiu-jitsu is, and a part of that is just my personality. I'm not naturally aggressive person now in my 40s, but because I have that vehicle, none of the people I train were absolute killers that play magic and do crossword puzzles. Like, you would never think that these people were killers on the street if you saw them, and they are. But none of them seem to have any none of them have any drive to be aggressive in their everyday lives because there is an outlet for it. And I think that when men don't have a healthy outlet for that, you know, this is how you get dude, you know, come on, man, 45 years old. trying to put on pads somewhere. You're 40 years old, still out there trying to. I played in these faculty basketball games and left scratched up. Was it really that necessary? But this is your vehicle. This is your lane and your vehicle to, quote unquote, prove to yourself. And again, I'm not saying everybody is like this, but this is your lane to prove to yourself to get some of that stuff out that you never get to get out on a daily basis.
Well, that's an interesting theory, particularly looking at this Paul Pierce situation, right? Because you have to think that, hey, before he did that, it's not necessary. Okay, there's many components. There's that he did it, but that's not really the problem that ESPN has with it. The problem is that he made it live. So it's like, what made you decide to do that live? And it's interesting when I'm listening to your perspective on it. Not because I'm not just thinking about the act itself. I mean, that's one thing. But then to make the act live and how there might be different components possibly of masculinity there. Because basically it says, and I think there's some parts where maybe he said, oh, this is going to get me fired or something. This, who cares or something. So that's a whole masculinity chapter itself. It's like, well, I'm the truth. So I'll do what I want to do. You know, like that's interesting. I mean, it'd be a separate conversation about whether he should be fired or not, but that act, I guess in some ways the defiance of it, if that's his perspective, like, oh, I might get fired, I'm gonna do it anyways, kind of, I think, speaks to your points.
And that the idea that I am a man, and this is so layered, particularly when it comes to black men and race. Because for those that don't know, Paul Pierce is a black man. It's layered because we are masculinity, I believe, means something very, very different to us as black men in America. Because we are a race of men that have been emasculated by this country for generations. So being a man means something to us and means something on a very different level as compared to other cultures, I think.
Well, that's an interesting point, too. I lost you a little bit, so I didn't hear everything you said. But I think one thing that's interesting like that, so thinking about masculinity and the intersectionality of just being a black male, and it just makes me think of history overall. You know, I was watching Django not too long ago, and that made me think about the history with slaves and slave fighting and having the biggest, strongest male, you know, which would be titled then as the buck. It's not just about fighting if they happen to be one of the slaves that would do the fighting, but also it's the procreating. So I mean, from a very early age, as part of the history that was, this part was systematically created, and then this, there's a whirlwind of it going forward as time goes on that people don't think about. I'm not saying like, well, that is the cause, but there's some historical connections that you could find if you just read a book about it.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, and people have to, it's interesting when you, I know right now somebody is listening and they're like, oh my God, they're talking about slavery. It was so long ago. But, you know, my grandmother's mother was born a slave in America. Like, you know, when you think about it in years, it seems like a long time. When you think about it, generations, we're talking about 3 or 4 generations. So it's like we aren't that far removed from a lot of those adaptations that people had to make to survive, you know, and that's what they are. Some people call it pathology. I call it adaptation. Like you just adapt to survive and you adapt to the situations. But back to Paul Pierce, I think that especially for us, we don't want to, masculinity means something to us. So it's kind of like, we don't want to feel like anybody has, sometimes we don't want to feel like we're being emasculated by our job, the man.
Hey, I feel that. I mean, because I feel that same way. Yeah. But don't worry, I'm not going to be on IG doing nothing crazy. But I do feel that.
Because what they said is, Paul, aren't you worried about your job? Boy, don't you know what they call me? The truth. I do what I want to do. I ain't thinking about these folks. I got plenty of bread. I got plenty of money. But don't nobody tell me, but the idea, when you add the layer of race, the idea of not doing something, even if you don't really want to do it, the idea that you don't want to do something because you're afraid of what some other man will say, adds an entirely different layer. Now, I know there are people listening, and I know women are listening, and they're going, men are ridiculous. Like, we can't believe that y'all go through all of these hoops. It is what it is. Free game. I mean, masculinity and being a man means that much to men. The idea that we will put ourselves in harm's danger just so we won't feel like we're being, for a lack of a better term, pumped by another man. I'll tell you, this will seem ridiculous to women, but men out there who are listening understand this. A man will fight another man that he knows that he can't beat up. A man will physically fight and take the risk of getting beat up and dying because I am a man and this is what men are supposed to do, even though I know I'm supposed to lose. Even though I know I'm not bigger, I'm not stronger, the guy's faster, it doesn't matter. For me to be a man, I have to do this. I have to take this whooping. If you a man would have taken that whooping. And then if you run away from a fight, if you shy away from conflict, not just a physical fight, but conflict in general, people question your masculinity. I said this before, this is a part of the reason why masculinity means so much to men. It's because it feels like at every turn in our life, our masculinity is always being challenged to some degree, not just by each other, but by the women in our lives. We're always being challenged on our jobs by the quote unquote man who's our supervisor in some way, shape, form, or fashion. He gonna talk crazy to me because he know he's the supervisor. He know I need this job. Like, I know I need my job. But the supervisor, another man, it's already humbling enough to have to take orders from another man. Okay?
Or even if it's not a man.
And that, oh God, look, no, please don't. That's a whole different layer of something when you have to take orders from a woman, from a male perspective. But it's already humbling enough that I have to take orders from a man. And then he gonna talk crazy to me knowing that he's my superior and there's nothing I can do, I need my job. So you have this internal fight. It is literally eating you at your core that this dude is talking crazy to me, but I can't say anything because I need my job. And it eats you alive inside. So wait, hold on real quick. So take another step and you can speak to this, because this is how violence happens in families. Think about it. So I go and displace that energy. I already don't get the respect that I deserve and need in my job. I take crap from my boss. I can't take it out on him. So who do I go and take it out on? My wife. I get my plate first. I get the big piece of chicken. She can't take it out on me because I'm bigger and stronger than her. So who she take it out on? The kids. The kids can't take it out on her. Who they take it out on? They fighting each other. Or they go to school and they find somebody who's helpless like them. And then they become bullies. But it all started with my father, who felt emasculated by another man on his job. And he displaced that energy to his family. Thoughts?
Well, okay, there's a whole lot there. But what I was thinking before you went into all that, in the middle of all that, I'm going to go where I was thinking. So I was thinking of the movie Crash. in that movie, if you guys have seen it, what's my man's name? The one that's on Hustle and Flow.
Terrence Howard.
Terrence Howard, right? There's a scene in there, you know, where he is just very fed up with experiencing all these different microaggressions, and he stands up to the police officers at the end, almost gets shot. And that scene came to my mind because maybe it doesn't necessarily apply to Paul Pierce's situation, but I think thinking about a Black man, right, who's experienced all these things from society that may be emasculating him, not just about what's going on at the job, right? Whatever's going on at the job from a boss, whatever gender, is one component. But then what's happening in society and having to feel like you gotta kind of shrink down a bit. So you expect it to be a man because you're a man. But then while you're a Black man, don't be too much of a man, because you can't have certain people being afraid of you, which means you can't really be all that you are, which means you also gotta, you know, shrink down. Maybe you're not being totally punk sometimes, but you can't really speak up the way that you want to. And that will increase even more depending on the circles you're in, because you want to make everybody feel comfortable, that you will get to the point where you'll be more frustrated in situations that shouldn't be so frustrating, like that big piece of food or something that happens in the grocery store that becomes the last straw, like it did for Terrence Howard in that movie.
And that's a very good point. It's not just a job. Like I said, our masculinity is being challenged at every corner, and it gets exhausting. So the big piece of chicken do matter. Getting my plate first does matter. You see what I'm saying? I'm not saying that it should. I'm saying that it does, and that's why. Because you're constantly negotiating all of these situations, these little microaggressions. And somebody out there is saying, well, women, we get that. I'm not saying that we all aren't going through something, but that's not the conversation right now. We're talking about men.
Right. Yeah.
And that's what's important. And just because we're talking about men, it doesn't devalue anything anybody else is doing. Everybody's experiences deserve integrity. But you're exactly right. When you feel like you're constantly being challenged and constantly having to negotiate and constantly having to not speak up, you're constantly having to not do what you want to do or say what you want to say because of whatever ramifications of whatever, the big piece of chicken matter. Did my plate first matter?
And in this situation, it's not just speaking to just men. We're talking about Black men now. It's different. You know what I'm saying? If we're talking about white men, you know, we're not saying that masculinity can't be a struggle that all face, but there are different ways that it's faced depending on the culture you're in. And then the parameters society tries to put certain groups in. Like, you know, certainly there are certain privileges we have because we're men, but then there are other things that come because we're Black men. And that's all a part of the equation.
And what's interesting is, very good point, and what's interesting is, you know, we have to, speaking about the Black experience, we have to teach our children, particularly our sons, not to fall into that trap. Because there are people out there that know what masculinity means. They will purposefully try to emasculate you to get you to jump, to kick you out of class. The people will purposefully try to emasculate you. And again, obviously, I hate that I continue to have to say this, but we're not talking about all authority figures making a blanket statement or anything like that. But there are people who will purposefully try. I've had teachers who understood what masculinity meant to Black boys and Black men and would purposefully pick at you to make you say something and throw you out of class.
Well, even if they don't placate you, there's a learning that's happening in many circles at an early age that don't ruffle too many feathers, right? Don't be too masculine, because then you're going to get kicked out of class. So yeah. If something really bothers you, what you supposed to do with it? But then when you get in these other circles that might be neighborhood circles, oh, you're just going to let that happen? You're not going to do anything about that? then there's the conflict. Okay, one circle, I'm supposed to be, you know, in the block where I live, you know, where I have to show that I can be a man and defend and strong. And then I got to go to school where I have to tamper that down, because if I don't, then Mr. and Mrs. Susie going to be mad at me and kick me out of school. My parents ain't having that.
Yeah. Real quick, station identification. Quick station identification. This is WMUL 88.1 FM at Marshall University on your FM dial, 88.1 FM. This is Dr. Nate Chapman and Dr. Keelan Hinton, again, with Brother to Brother. And again, we're talking a bit about masculinity, the role that masculinity plays in the men's lives. More specifically now, we're talking about black men and just how masculinity influences identity, our sense of self, and how we interact in the world. So back to the point, I think what's important is that's why a lot of times when dudes or when men act out, it's such an overblown, their reaction to the big piece of chicken or whatever it is, the reaction is so overblown because of this conflict you're constantly dealing with. To protect yourself, you can't be too strong with who you are. You go in these other circles, you have to sort of prove your masculinity, and you're constantly, there's this back and forth tug, this tug of war that's constantly going on. That when you finally react and respond to something, it's overblown and people are like, where did that come from? That was ridiculous. That guy, and then you're a ridiculous guy. You're a ridiculous person. You're an aggressive person. When it's just this constant internal struggle that you're going through daily, just trying to balance life, just trying to keep it together. Yeah. You know? And again, this is why I think that it's important for all men to have some sort of outlet. Whether it's...
That's why I think it's good that we're having this conversation. This conversation does not negate anything that any other subset of society is going through, women or any other group. But I think having the space to have these conversations for men, particularly men of color, is important.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, you know, it's interesting how we, when we have these conversations, we have to feel our way. I know people are listening and they're like, you know, how polished is this show? There's a lot of dead air. Like, there's a lot of dead air in us saying, and us revising statements because we don't get to have these conversations. We don't, there aren't a lot of spaces for us to have these conversations. And we have the conversations, we haven't had them that many times that we even know exactly what we think or how we feel or how these connections are made or how these things influence each other or what's the catalyst, what's the, you know, we don't even talk about these things to even know where to even begin with a lot of these conversations. So that's, for those who are listening, it's truly like we come in, it's truly an organic conversation. We're trying to find and figure out the pieces, particularly when we talk about masculinity, to something that we never talk about and we never get to talk about. We never have the space to talk about. And a lot of times, excuse me, to be honest, we're kind of afraid to talk about these things because then I got to watch what I say when I talk about it because does this make me look soft? Does this make me look like I'm whining? Again, are people going to say I'm soft or what? So it's like we just shy away from talking about anything emotional in an emotional space because there again, my masculinity comes into question. And unfortunately, as ridiculous as it may sound to some people, that's all we have. That is it. Think about it. If I don't provide and protect, why am I here? What do I do? Again, we don't have babies. We don't. I'm not saying that men aren't more than that, but I'm saying from that perspective, masculinity is all we got. Being a man is all we have. So that is why it means so much. We live in a society that doesn't allow us to do or be anything else. And I think that that is a larger part of the problem. Women's roles have slightly, and not a lot, but have slightly evolved to some degree. Women can play sports. Women can wear pants. I know this sounds archaic, but I'm just making a point that from where we start, like from the beginning of time until now, to a certain degree, we allow women to do certain things. And then once women hit 17, 18, once you start to get older, then society starts to put pressure on you. Okay, all that softball stuff was cute now. Okay, it's time to go get a husband. It's time to go get a man. So I'm just saying that to say, even we wrangle women back in their place to some degree. Okay, I'm not saying that. I'm saying society. We are men. Our roles have not changed since the beginning of time. Provide and protect, and that's it. And if you don't provide and you don't protect, you ain't a man. You might be male, but you ain't a man. You ain't a whole man. And that is the problem. Our roles, I think that people won't let men evolve. And we have to think about how we define what it means to be a man and what masculinity is.
Well, I think that's an interesting point, because I'm thinking about, you know, how some things have changed in certain circles, and you might have, just in certain circles, you have women that are more of the provider. They're more educated. They're bringing more of the income home in, and it even makes.
We call those women single.
Huh?
We call those women single.
Okay, but not always the case.
Wait, hold on real quick. I mean to cut you off, but to be clear, I'm not saying anybody, I know somebody is throwing something at the radio right now. I am not saying that. I am saying research shows the more educated a woman becomes, the least likely she is to get married. The more educated a woman becomes and the more successful she becomes, the least likely she is to have a partner to want her.
That's true. I mean, I was going there. That is true. Ladies and gentlemen, the research says that. It's not just because two men are saying that. You can do your own research. But there are situations where people are married, and in these situations where the woman is making the most. And my point of going there is, I think sometimes that's where emasculation becomes an issue. And I'm not saying it's not like it's the woman's fault because she happens to make more than the man. But I think those are some variables that need to be considered, right? Because in these cases, that person's probably more susceptible to being vulnerable to some of these acting out situations. You know, this person, and it's not that it has to be back to the whole gender role, but if in that person, and they're feeling pressure by society, already feeling pressure because they don't fit into whatever the classic role is, their wife makes more than them, they're not making much at all, and they're not really contributing the way they think they should, that makes that couple and that person more vulnerable to some of these issues.
I agree. I think what you said is important, that let's be very clear. It's not, women aren't doing anything but living their lives. But again, the fact that society won't let me be okay with the fact, it's not just me. Like, society will not let me be okay with the fact that my wife makes more money than me. People are going to talk about me. They're going to challenge my masculinity. And then again, ultimately, I understand, and I can hear people screaming, ultimately, I understand that is a man's problem. And it is. Because ultimately, it is an issue that men have to deal with.
Just to be clear, no one's saying that that we're saying that women shouldn't make more. Of course they should.
Yeah.
We're talking about the dynamic it creates with that particular male. Maybe it doesn't bother all males that way, but and how that's coming from the outside and not just from that person. It's coming from some things that are a part of this society that say, well, you should be doing this or you should be doing that, you know, or we're talking about changes in income, but what if the dad is the stay home dad? In those cases, that's also created some societal frowns depending on the circle that this person's in.
And again, that is what it boils down to. You hit the nail on the head perfectly. It is all about society and a society allowing me to evolve and be something different. And if we will ever, I think that this is a generation that is trying to change those norms. I don't know if it will ever happen. I don't think, I don't, I don't, I don't think that that will ever happen. I don't think that we will ever be able to redefine the way that as a society and as a species, we think about men and masculinity. At the end, we can say whatever. We can say, I want a sensitive man. I want a man to hold me. I want a man to cry for me. At the end of the day, you want your man to be a man. Like the everyday average person on the street. Again, research. This is not me. When women are polled, if you're coming from the movies and you see your ex-boyfriend and he says, I had it first, you want your man to go over there and smack him. At the end of the I'm talking about, this is the problem with those who may be listening to this show. You can't assume that the level of consciousness in the room is universal. That is our problem. There's a very different level of conversation. There's a very different level of consciousness having this conversation and listening to this conversation and having these conversations than the everyday average person on the street. Now, I don't mean that. I don't mean to say that to be disrespectful or say there's a superior or an inferior. I'm saying it's different.
Yeah. No, and I think it's hard for people to realize. I was having a conversation, giving a discussion on physical punishment, right? And the last data I've seen on physical punishment says something like 80% of people in the United States are pro physical punishment. And so in this particular class, the kids were like, it was usually not the way it goes, but the students were all against physical punishment strongly, like vehemently, like, no, that should be, it's horrible, it shouldn't happen. And then I asked them that question, well, what do you think the population leans? And they're like, I'm pretty sure everybody's against it. That's because the five people in the room were like all for it. Felt like this is going to be it. And that's what happens in these situations. Like think about your circle anyways. Your circle is usually like your friends. People going through that phase of unfriending people. Some people didn't have to unfriend anybody because the people in their circle think just like them. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So this absolutely has, we've only scratched the surface of all of this masculinity stuff. But I think that an important point to bring it. And the thing is I wonder, this brings me to another point. This is a personal point. I wonder if anybody cares. Like, I think that there is a push. I don't know if this is just my personal opinion. I don't know if there has ever been a genuine move to truly care and figure out how men feel or why men do what we do. Why we are the way we are. I don't think as a society we truly care because we view men as competent. Men are competent. And anything a man does, he knew what he was doing. And you did it because you wanted to do it. Not because you're traumatized. Not because you're hurt. Not because society put these pressures on you. We're like, men make more than women. Men make more than women in regards to finances. Men in a position are in more positions of power. How can you sit and tell me about pressure that you feel from society? So it's hard to want to hear this perspective. And again, this is why I say nothing will ever change. I know that sounds bad. Nothing will ever, ever, ever change because we look at men as men and we don't look at men as people.
That's interesting. It's interesting. I want to bring up a point that kind of relates. I've worked with a couple once that was having like a microcosm of this. The male was talking about how much pressure. He was the one who was the main provider and always has been and always wanted to be, didn't have a problem with it. But he was talking about how much pressure he felt about being the provider. And that same token, his partner was talking about how much pressure she felt about if the relationship didn't work out, how she wouldn't have anything. In this case, both of their concerns are real. There is pressure to being in a situation where if you have decided as a couple that only one is going to carry all of the burden, and there's also pressure for the other one who doesn't really know what's going to happen. It's possible for there to be more than one concern, and they don't have to be opposing necessarily. You can have two sides of an equation where both people are affected in different ways, and that can be okay.
But that's only okay if you view yourself as a team. This is, we are a team. So when you view when two people or entities view themselves as a team, I understand that you have issues and I have issues. These are, we talking about struggles of power and control. And when you see struggles of power and control, and when you feel victimized, when one party feels victimized and the other party feels demonized, you're on opposite sides of a fence and you're trying to win. So it's hard for men. Men are like, look, I'm not trying to hear none of that stuff that women are saying, because if we get divorced, you're going to get all my stuff. And women are trying to say, look, I'm not trying to hear none of that, because at the end of the day, men make more money and you are in a position of power physically. You're in a position of power financially. Like you have the, you're in a position to be dominant. So I don't want to hear any of that stuff about how society makes you feel. No one cares about how society makes you feel with everything that you have going for you. And men are like, look, so we're not thinking about, we're all on the same team and everybody has a perspective and how these. Well, yeah.
I think that's a good point. I know we're coming up on time, but I think the other thing is, it's comical that you said that, because my thought was, well, yeah, of course we don't care how you feel as men, because men are not allowed to feel. So.
Yeah.
Societally speaking, you know?
Yeah. So, and yeah, we, again, just scratching the surface. And I knew that when you brought this topic up, what did I say? There's another 3-part series. We instantly knew that this would be another 2 or 3-part series, because the nuances of it all. Like today, we just, and it was just towards the end, we just started to dig and we just started to tap into this notion of idea of society and societal norms and societal pressures that make men feel pushed and poked and prodded to act and respond and react in a certain way. And there's just so much more to talk about. There's just so many more avenues and so many more lanes to go through. So for those who are listening, part 2 next week. Dr. Chapman, what do you think? Part 2 next week?
Say that again?
Part 2 next week of this. So, yeah. So, there will be a part 2 of this next week. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe we'll get into toxic. We'll get into Dr. Hinton's favorite subject.
Yeah, we'll get into toxic masculinity. And is that a real thing or is that a myth? So, we'll see how that goes. But again, as we always say, we thank those who continue to support the show. We thank those who continue to support the show. We thank those who continue to listen. As we always say, graveyards are full of death and graveyards are full of death. Wow, I know. Graveyards are full of regret and potential. You know, make sure that you are living a life that when you die, you take nothing to the grave with you. Make sure those that you love know that you love them and you love hard. And as I always say, make sure that you are doing something in this life that gives you meaning, that gives you purpose, that makes you feel fulfilled, and that sets your soul on fire. And again, I want to say this quickly. Look, these are just our opinions and our perspectives. As we always say, we like to thank Marshall University and WMUL for giving us this platform to explore some of these ideas and have real conversations about how real people feel. The whole purpose of this, again, is we don't know it all. And we hope to encourage and inspire people to think about these things and to have these conversations with people around you and to find your truth. So by all means, it's important that you know that we're not saying that we know everything, but we want to inspire people to have these conversations with people around you, okay? So as I always say, I love you all. Thank you for supporting us. Peace and blessings, and Dr. Chapman will take us out.
Yeah, I think as Dr. Hinton was alluding to, we have realized, and us, I think, would consider ourselves scholars, and what scholars know is that, scholars and scientists, is that we don't have all of the answers, and sometimes the world is full of a lot of questions, and a journey to try to answer those questions. And we're glad that you're joining that journey with us. As we think about a number of these things, you know, today we're talking about masculinity, and really what came to mind is a little bit off of masculinity. It's having these conversations with people in your circle and outside of your circle who have differing opinions. There are lots of things going on in the world today. You know, you have the anti-Asian violence and racism. You have the trial coming up with the George Floyd, which can be triggering for many people in the population. And every day there are struggles that many different groups face, whether they're in this country or abroad. And the question is, are you having conversations with people in your life that have different opinions? Are you making space? Are you opening up your ears and opening up rooms to absorb those different opinions so that you can add something new of quality to your life? These conversations are not always easy. Sometimes they're difficult. And I would say sometimes people think because you're not having these conversations, they're conversations that don't need to be had. And to me, that is like a symptom I see in relationships sometimes. You ask the couple what's going on and they'll say, oh, nothing, we're all good, we never argue, which means they never have tough conversations. I don't even mean that to say that every couple needs to argue, but as people that have encounters with different people every day in your life, you're not gonna have easy conversations with everybody. The closer you know someone, the more likely you should be to have some type of scuff every now and then, something that needs a conversation, something that needs a refreshing new look at something. If you're not having those conversations, you're not growing. And if you're not growing, you might as well be dying. So I hope that you decide to have some newer conversations between now and the next. And thank you. Peace and blessings.
Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Yes, I am, yes, I am, yes, I am. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. I believe every lie that I ever told. Paid for every heart that I ever stole. I played my cards and I didn't fold. Well, it ain't that hard when you got sold. Somewhere I heard that life is a test. I've been through the worst, but I still get my best. God made my mold different from the rest. Then he broke that mold, so I know I'm blessed. Stand up now and face the sun. Won't hide my tail or turn and run. It's time to do what must be done. Be a king when kingdom comes. Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody.